To order, please. Well, Representative Atkins, we almost have a quorum. We need one more legislator, so we're going to pass the minutes once we get one more legislator and keep the ball rolling. I want to thank you all for coming out on this very cold day, but it will be very good to meet these agenda items and have some questions. And with that, our first the first thing that we can actually get to is Michelle Kalm-Helgen. Ms. Helgen, if you would like to come up and give us a presentation from the Stadium Authority. And you have your report here that's in your packet, members. That was introduced January 15th. So welcome.
Great. Thank you very much. It's good to be here. Yes, as is often the case, there's a lot going on with the stadium construction project, and we are making progress. So, first of all, I've had a number of questions and just want to address the issue of the lawsuit that had been pending that the Supreme Court dismissed a couple days ago. I think on Tuesday, I think it was, from our perspective, it was very positive. We were very thankful that they dealt with it so expeditiously. The issues were such that they had been dealt with actually by other courts at other points in time, so I think everyone was fairly certain that we were not concerned about the merits of the case, but we certainly were concerned about the delay that it caused in the bond sale. Now that the Supreme Court has dismissed that case, and actually there was another case that had been filed in Hennepin County District Court last summer that had also been dismissed, Mr. Mann, the same plaintiff that had gone to the Supreme Court, had another case that he was appealing in Hennepin County District Court. And on Tuesday, that case was also dismissed in the Court of Appeals. So both those cases now have been dismissed. So we are confident that everything will again resume with the bond sale. I know the state is moving ahead on that, and there were really two pieces that we were most concerned about that we were affected by with the potential delay in the bond sale. The first was just we were expecting cash from the bond sale to pay our bills as of the end of this month. And now that we are moving ahead with the bond sale and everyone has assurance that things are moving, we're definitely managing our cash flow well enough to handle the bills that will be due. So that won't be a problem. The second piece that we were really concerned about, we were supposed to be closing on two pieces of property. One, the downtown east, the plaza, along with that underground parking ramp that was part of our requirement to provide parking spots as part of the legislation. And it also was part of that $400 million Wells Fargo Ryan development, along with the purchase of the land for the parking ramp that was going to be built that was part of the Wells Fargo Ryan development. With the court determining that they were dismissing the suit, Ryan has been able to work with their partners, Wells Fargo and the Tribune, to be able to adjust their schedule to accommodate, you know, a few days lag in time. So all that being said, we're confident that we'll be able to meet our obligations and move forward both on the Ryan Wells Fargo development, which is so significant. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as I go through my report. And then also obviously pay the bills to all the small business Minnesota companies that are all small businesses that have been doing work for the last month on our project. So with that, just in general, kind of a construction update to give you as far as where we're at on things. We are definitely moving ahead with the construction. If you drive by 11th Avenue and take a look at the back of our parking lot, or what used to be the parking lot, there's already a major hole that's been dug, and they are actually doing drilling for piers, which will be holding up the structure that's going to be built. So Mortenson is really on kind of a dual track. At the same time, the demolition is proceeding, and I think you may have heard about the fact that we deflated the roof and cut the power, and you know, now the demolition is really beginning in earnest. At the same time that that demolition is being done, which will take a couple of months, they will also be beginning or continuing with major construction on the other side of the lot, back where the parking lot had been. So that construction demolition will take place in tandem over the next couple months. I think everyone was, the last meeting that we had, we talked in somewhat detail about the sale of the seats and how that could be handled and what we were going to be able to do or not do depending upon how we approach that. I think we actually, considering all the challenges we had, came up with a really good solution, and it seems like it worked quite well. So Fratellone, which is the demolition firm, it's a local Minnesota company that's doing the demolition, is essentially committed, as they're doing everything, I want to assure you that over 90% of everything, all the materials, both inside the Metrodome as well as the concrete structure, the roof, everything else, over 90% of everything related to the Metrodome will be reused or recycled. And Fratellone, in the contract that they bid to do the demolition, part of their contract was the whole reuse, recycling, resale of all those things. So they're handling all that. We kept the seats out. We kept that separate because we wanted to make sure that we had the opportunity to provide those to some of the groups that were looking for them. So the Facilities Authority contracted separately with Albrecht Sign Company, again, a local Minnesota company. Actually, it's a targeted business that dealt with the sale of the seats. They came in. We did an RFP. We had three or four firms that actually bid. They were definitely the most competitive. They met all the requirements that we had asked them to do. And essentially what they did is they said, okay, for the average seat that would be sold to individual people or to any for-profit companies, if it's just a general seat, we'll charge them $60. If it's a specific seat, I want row A in section 102, seat 13 and 14. If we have to go pick out specific seats, there'll be an additional charge. It'll be $80. For all the nonprofit groups, they essentially, I mean, really, when you look at what they did, I think they came in, they gave us a price of $40 a seat, which was $10 less than what we had been told by Mortenson, just their base cost would have been to take those seats out. So, and as it turned out, there were a good deal of schools and community organizations and civic groups that came in and bought those seats. And I think there's been a couple stories that have been done about some of the groups that have bought them. But in total, there's been already to date over 18,000 seats have been sold to individuals and groups. So we've been very surprised at the interest in the seats and the number of people and groups and folks that have come forward. And generally speaking, the response has been very positive. Albrecht Signs has done a fabulous job in, you know, really trying to meet all the demands in a very short period of time. They did take a few thousand seats to a warehouse, and they are continuing to fill orders from folks that want to continue, you know, that didn't get there early enough to pick them up at the dome. So I think overall that whole seat issue was satisfied pretty well. And it's just always interesting to see the interest, you know, when it comes right down to it and in something like that. But so the power was cut off to the stadium last Saturday, actually, and the roof deflated. And they've already cut out really 80 to 90% of the roof has already been, pieces have already been cut. Fratellone is using those for tarps for their own business, for, you know, other demolition and construction projects that they're involved in. So they're actually reusing that material themselves. So now we're beginning in earnest the concrete work on the superstructure. So it's not going to be very long before you actually see on the back where the parking lot had been sort of the rise of the actual construction of the stadium itself. And by next summer and spring, you'll start seeing, you know, the structural steel coming in and all those other pieces. So we'll keep you updated on the construction process as it moves along. The demolition is being done fairly slowly and carefully. It'll take a couple months for the actual concrete structure to be demolished. They're not doing a big implosion. They don't want a lot of dust and dirt to, you know, arise. There's too many businesses located around there. So they're actually doing, you know, a traditional demolition process, kind of section by section. They'll start on one side and go around counterclockwise. But again, as I mentioned, while they're demolishing it, they have some time because they can begin, you know, they've got the major construction going on in the parking lot at the same time. So it's a dual process. So that's kind of an overview of where we are in the construction process. And it is definitely moving along, and we're seeing some pretty major progress. We went through a fairly detailed summary of where we've been in the last year in the report that we submitted that was submitted to you all. I believe it was emailed to all the members of this committee as well as leadership in the House and the Senate to the four leaders. I think we mailed hard copies to all the members of this committee, and we certainly have other copies with us today if anyone needs anything. But it went through in a fair amount of detail kind of where we are in the process. But there's a couple things I just want to highlight. The first thing that we really have seen major progress on since the last time I came is that Ryan development. And I really emphasize that because, you know, the whole concern and the whole focus for all of you in the legislature when we passed this legislation, as you looked at different sites, there was a lot of analysis and a lot of discussion as to what was going to provide the greatest economic impact. And it's not just about what the events that the stadium brings, and we'll talk in a minute about some of those things, but it's really about the economic development activity that takes place around the new stadium, in addition to just a billion-dollar development and the jobs and the obviously the work that comes from the construction of the stadium itself. It was really about that surrounding area. There was some concern given the fact that the Metrodome had never had any economic impact. There really were never, other than Hubert's Barn Grill, there really was never any economic development that took place around it. It was kind of surrounded by a sea of parking lots. And that was really a major focus, to make sure that whatever was done, that it was done differently so that it would encourage development rather than kind of sitting as an island the way the Metrodome has played out. And I think there was a lot of focus by the city of Minneapolis, I will say, but also just given the legislative directive by the authority and the team to try to make sure, working with our architects, that the building that was designed would be really connected to the neighborhood and would be the kind of iconic design facility that other businesses would want to come. This becomes sort of the anchor for a new neighborhood that people want to be part of. And I think the biggest testimony to the fact that the area that you identified was probably the best area in terms of economic development is the fact that this Wells Fargo development with two office towers that will house 5,000 employees, $400 million in investment coming to that area, more than what the state, I might add, has invested themselves in the stadium. That $400 million in investment is now committed, and we are just finalizing all the agreements for that. And I think it's going to be a big advantage for the stadium as well, because what that Ryan development does, and the last time I think we went through and looked at some maps, but it, number one, provides the Skyway connection to the downtown, and I'll talk in a few minutes about some of the events we hope to attract that are really wintertime events, and being connected by Skyway to hotels, restaurants, parking facilities, that is going to be a huge advantage as we look at attracting all these other major events to the stadium, as well as providing easy access and parking for, obviously, Viking fans, but also the hundreds of, whether it's baseball games that are played by high schools and colleges, soccer tournaments, football tournaments, all those things that happen in the winter and spring, having that Skyway connection for folks is going to be really key. So that's really important. In addition, this, I think, is a very unique public-private partnership, because essentially what we did is we took the revenues from the parking ramps, both the one underground, the downtown east ramp that we will own, as well as the new ramp that's being constructed. And that new ramp can be used during the week, during the day, by the Wells Fargo employees, and then in the evenings and on the weekends by authority patrons. And it's a very, I mean, any parking we would have owned would have kind of been revenue losers, generally speaking, because you can't, unless there's folks coming during the week to provide some revenue, it's difficult to make a go of it just on the events that we hold, which primarily are weekends and some evenings. So it turns those ramps into good revenue generators. So the unique piece of all this was, part of what Wells Fargo wanted to be part of was the city coming in saying, okay, we'll be part of this as well. Put in a two-block city park across the street from the Wells Fargo development, connected to our plaza there right in front of the stadium. So essentially, with the property we own plus the two city blocks, city park blocks, three blocks of park, plaza space, if you will, that can be used for all the events that we're trying to attract, as well as for all the events that will be held at the stadium in general. Then it's the revenue from those parking ramps that go to pay off those bonds that pay for the park as well as the parking ramps or parking ramp. So it's a really unique, there's no tax increment, there's no additional tax money going into this. It just is, you know, this partnership that came together that essentially financed this public-private partnership that has some major benefits for all of us. And of course, from the city of Minneapolis's perspective, this park that they're investing in is available to their residents, you know, on a regular basis as well. So I think it's really important. That kind of brings me to the next economic development impact, if you will, of the stadium. We already, just with the design, which really has only been completed and public for a couple of months, at this point already, we've been designated as a finalist for the Super Bowl, as I think you probably know. They're down to three cities, Indianapolis, New Orleans, and Minneapolis. Indianapolis held the Super Bowl in 2012. New Orleans held it, as you know, in 2013. And essentially what we're looking at is the fact that Indianapolis documented from their own direct experience, they put together a report and they said, the economic impact to our city, and I think we're pretty comparable to Indianapolis if you look at it. We are probably a little bit bigger. But the economic impact in 2012 to Indianapolis from the Super Bowl was $387 million. Again, more than what the state is investing in the new stadium. So we're a finalist for that, going through a bid process, obviously being led by the Vikings, along with the authority, along with the state, along with Meet Minneapolis. There's a broad group that's come together, the business community, to make this bid, and I'm sure there'll be things that we'll be talking to you about soon as far as how the state can support this. But the economic impact from that event, that I think we have a very good opportunity to land, $387 million. In addition, we have already put in an application for the Final Four. They're going to be announcing finalists here fairly soon. We hope to be a finalist for that as well. That decision won't be made until November, although they'll be announcing the finalists fairly soon. If we get back in that NCAA cycle, preliminary rounds first and then final rounds, again, we're looking at major hundreds of millions of dollars in potential economic impact. This is all in addition to all the other events that we hope to attract and all the things that we will continue to do for high schools, colleges, you know, little leagues, roller dome, all the things that the public has come to rely on in this multi-purpose stadium. So I believe that already, and I look at my job now as we get through, you know, sort of all this early process and all the agreements, and a lot of my time is now being focused on kind of the marketing aspect of the stadium, as well as we are going to be going out and doing some public meetings out there in February, March, and April in greater Minnesota to talk about the stadium, what's coming, show people the design. This is a statewide asset. It's a statewide investment, and people have a lot of interest in it, and they have a lot of thoughts about things that they want to make sure are included or not included and how things are done. So we'll be doing a lot of public meetings.
Chair Gail Helgen, if you could hold on for just a second.
Sure.
Just as, before you get on to the rest of your report, the equity program. Is there any questions from the members? Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And, excuse me.
I'm just wondering what the, you said $387 million was the economic impact in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit off topic, but do you have any idea what the economic impact is of the Ryder Cup? I heard that's coming.
Yes. I don't, but certainly good. It's something we should look at to find out. I believe it's going to be here in 2016.
2016.
The same time that our stadium is going to be opening. And there actually has been some talk about perhaps one of their opening events maybe being held at the new stadium. Who knows?
Then I think, Madam Chair, we should assume the economic impact is roughly the same, if not bigger. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Ms. Kelm-Helgen, talking about the bond sale, what's the schedule of that coming up? And would you anticipate, because of the court challenge and such, that would have any kind of an adverse impact on the interest rate you get in the bond sale?
You know, the bond sale is being done by the state, and I really would hesitate to speak for them about that's not really my area of expertise. I do know from the state's perspective, we've been told that they had everything ready to go a week and a half ago or whenever it was that the whole thing kind of was put on hold. So I've been told that they were teed up for it and now they're moving ahead post haste. But I would and it's going to be soon, but I'd hesitate to give you a date, and I'm not sure about the interest rate. I don't know what they were looking at, and I don't know what they'd be looking toward. So I'm not the best person to respond to that.
And members, both co-chairs, and I'm not sure, Representative Brenner, if you talk to the commissioner, Scholwalter, we did have a conversation yesterday with them, and they are prepared to head out there right away to do the sale. And the question did come up on the rate, and he felt that they would be able to lock it in at what they anticipated earlier. So, but they are they want to get this finished right away. So, unfortunately, they were invited to come, especially after the lawsuit was filed. They had some other prior commitments, but if there's any questions that anybody has, we're going to write them down. They'll send a formal answers to all of us. So If you have any questions, let's get them out, and we'll get some answers to you on that, because we could not get anybody from MMB to be here. So, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Kelm-Helgen, thank you for the presentation so far. Certainly very exciting if Minnesota could be selected for the Super Bowl. My question for you is, the proposal for the stadium is at roughly 65,000 seats and expandable up to 72,000 seats, from what I understand, if there is a Super Bowl. How does that process work for the extra seats? Who's responsible for paying for them? And then do those become permanent seats at the stadium, or would they be temporary and be removed if we were so fortunate enough to get the Super Bowl here?
Yes. Thank you. Right now, we already, because we do have to, as part of our bid, submit the seat plan that shows specifically where all those seats would go and how they would go in. Clearly, it would be our cost to accommodate that in terms of our seats. We have in our design accommodated spaces for those seats, so there's no specific cost from that standpoint. There obviously, there'll be the purchase of extra seats. We would do that as part of our construction, because we also need the extra seats as we apply for some of these other big events. The Final Four also requires the 72,000 seats. This is kind of typical for these big events to have up to that number that you have to show being able to be accommodated in the stadium. So that is already accounted for.
And
Senator Miller?
Madam Chair, so Ms. Kelm-Helbing, those would essentially become permanent seats at the facility then, or?
Well, not necessarily. Our architect could address it better, but as I've just looked at some of the preliminary plans, some of them come in and they sit in places that are, maybe in front of windows that they're put in on temporary platforms. So they're not necessarily permanent seats. They're just, we would have to have a place to store them, and we would have to have these systems in place to accommodate them, because Super Bowl, as I mentioned, Final Four, and there probably are other events that we would compete for. So it would be something that we'd have to have a storage spot for, and we'd bring them in and out most likely.
Thank you. Madam Chair, maybe the PBR could come to Minnesota. We'd probably need 100,000 seats for that.
It's going to work on that one. $400 million of economic activity right there.
Absolutely. Is that the rodeo?
Yes.
That Houston hosts the rodeo. That's not so funny. It's been talked about as really that's a major event that brings in a great deal of people and revenue and impact. So.
Not so strange. China's doing it. They're bringing the PBR in.
that's a good event.
Madam Chair, I think there's at least one bowl available, right?
Oh, I'm sure there's still one really badass bowl.
One of the best in the country, as I understand.
That's exactly bowl. Right. I did pass my belt buckle around.
Oh, yeah. I tried taking it with me, and they stopped me at
that's
the door.
That's right. So. I did. Chair Kelm-Helgen, I do have a question for you. I know there isn't probably one singular reason why this is going to be, this public-private partnership is going to work down in the Dome area. Has Minneapolis ever given you a reason why the Metrodome never did expand beyond what Hubert's, as you said, I think that's that great analogy. I mean, it just fell flat. So there's all these other plans that we have with the new stadium, but what is their reasoning why it never took off? Because they didn't have their own investment into the area, or what did they ever say?
Well, people speculate a lot about why it happened. I do think their planning staff talks about the fact that originally when the Metrodome went in, all of the city plans, really their big concern was they didn't want development leaving the downtown core. And at that time, that Metrodome area was kind of on the fringes. Mm. So they really never encouraged development to come that direction, because they thought of it as more on the fringe, and they wanted to keep it more focused in the center. As time went on, and obviously the city, everything expanded, and then they were looking to try to bring development there. It really, and I think the big turning point was where people say, well, the light rail was there. It now is a significant transit hub. And I think that also is why so many people are now interested in that. But if you think about it, it's really been a good 10 years or more that there's been this question or cloud over what's going to happen to the Metrodome. You had the Twins leaving and building a new ballpark. You had the Vikings saying, we don't really want to stay here. This is not, you know, a state-of-the-art facility. So people were very hesitant, even though the light rail and transit connection has been there for seven years. I think people have been hesitant to make any investment there, thinking they didn't want to locate around this white elephant. But now that there's certainty as to what is going to be there, I think that's the main thing, that all of a sudden people are saying, yes, you know, this is the central hub for Central Corridor coming online here this spring, along with the Hiawatha Corridor. It's a major, major transit hub. And now with this potential Skyway connection and the stadium, I think all of a sudden people know what's there. They know the certainty. And I think that's the big difference.
And, Chair, what is with the new leadership from Minneapolis, what is their commitment, or interactions, what's the conversations like now?
You know, it's been interesting because I started, you know, the new mayor. The new mayor had actually, Mayor Hodges, had not supported the project originally, was not one of the seven people. However, once it passed, even as a council member, she was very clear when I came on. I met with her early on, and she was very clear, this has passed, it's what's being done, and I want to try to make it work. And she was on this implementation committee that the authority worked with to really look at the external design and how to connect it to the neighborhoods. So she was on that committee and very involved and very committed. As mayor, her commitment is absolutely there for us. And she's been really clear publicly in business events that I've been at with the chamber and downtown council that she is there to work with the stadium authority to make it work, to make sure that, you know, the development meets the needs of the city. And so very good. I have started meetings along with some of my other board members with the new council members. And I've had very positive response. The new council member from the ward, Council Member Fry, is publicly, you know, let it be known that he is working with the stadium authority and is going to make it work, very supportive. And really, so far I've met with four of the seven new council members, and I'm meeting with the other three next week. The four I've met with are very clear that they're supportive and want to make it work. So I feel like the relationship with the city has been good for the last year and a half, and I am very confident that that will continue. So that's important because we obviously have a lot of shared interests, and we need to make sure we, you know, move ahead in the construction process in a positive relationship with the city. So I feel good about that.
And before we get on with the rest of your report, Representative Atkins has a question. I just would like to ask the implementation committee that you talked about, where are they at with that? Are they still meeting? Is their work complete?
Well, the implementation committee that was set up, I think, as part of the legislation for the city, their work is complete. They completed their report. It was presented to the city council. And it really had a major impact on our design on the external part of the stadium. I mean, that's another topic someday for conversation, because I think that was a really good process that worked very well from everybody's perspective. They did complete their work, but what they've done now is they have essentially done a new committee that's sort of a reincarnation of that original implementation committee, and it's called the Park Use Committee, I believe. It's essentially now there to work on this two blocks of City Park and how it connects and interfaces with the stadium and how it would be designed and how we'll integrate our park plaza and our space with their space. And both I serve on that committee with all these other city folks, residents, businesses, elected officials, city staff. I serve on that. Lester Bagley from the Vikings does. And so that's kind of the ongoing, as I understand it, more formal connection with the city. So I think that's a good thing.
Representative Atkins.
Well, thank you. And thank you for joining us again today.
Sure.
What I'm concerned about is the relationship or the where things stand with the use of TCF in terms of what's next. The team is going to play there this fall. Is the authority involved in that, or is that directly between the team and the university?
You know, that's all been between the team and the university. The way the it's set up, it's direct relationships. They've negotiated all those agreements. You know, we really don't have a role in the TCF plane. There's not, we don't have any authority and anything that we do from an operational standpoint. So
I see Lester Bagley back there, and I have a couple questions for him. Maybe we can bring him up later.
I just wanted to raise an issue.
Later.
It just literally came up over lunch, and I've got to run to another meeting at 2. But my understanding was, there's a question as to whether or not the liquor license for TCF comes to sunsets in June. And I tried to alert the team folks before the meeting got underway. I don't know if they've had a chance to find an answer to that or not, but I suspect there might be some Green Bay fans that'd like to come over and have a beer at the game.
Welcome, Mr. Bagley.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Atkins, Lester Bagley with the Minnesota Vikings. We are looking into that. We just talked about it just before the committee convened here that per Representative Atkins that the liquor license expires there, so we're having conversations with the university. In terms of the status of our discussions regarding the stadium and making it ready for the NFL, we're probably within a week or two of finalizing the specific agreement on capital improvements, the heating system for the field, some other weatherization for the concourses in the stadium, some concessions issues, and capacity issues, temporary bleachers, et cetera. So we're probably within a week or two of having that finalized. We do have the use agreement that we negotiated with the university leadership, which was completed several months ago. So the basic fundamental rent and structure of our agreement are in place, but the final details of the capital improvements to make it NFL-ready are imminent, but not finalized yet.
And Madam Chair, thank you for that. It wasn't just the beer. It was actually the main gist of my question was that next year, when our team is in the playoffs at this time of year, is that TCF going to be warm enough so that folks can, you know, and the field freezing over and all those various issues, I'm assuming that that's all being addressed with the university, not just whether or not somebody can buy a beer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Atkins, yes, the capital improvements include weatherization issues, heating elements in the stadium. We had a number of our grounds crew and operations people that attended the hockey game that was held at TCF Stadium. They had a Gopher doubleheader, men's and women's hockey, and we had a number of our folks shadowing the university's operations and stadium staff. And before any of the capital improvements are made, there's definitely a need to address weatherization and playing this time of year, hopefully in the next couple of years. But again, those specific agreements and what exactly will go into that are being finalized, negotiated between our organization and the university's leadership.
And Madam Chair, thank you. And Madam Chair, thank you for letting me indulge in your time to find out the status of that. Thank you, Mr. Bagley.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we could get back to the soccer maybe later. Any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Just a quick one, Madam Chair. Thank you. The three blocks that the city is going to own the park area, we've talked a lot about game day experience. Will that be available for tailgating during Vikings games?
Chair Hilgen.
Madam Chair, the city only owns two blocks. The third block is owned by the authority. Yes, we are negotiating. I mean, part of this, if you remember the original legislation, very clearly outlined some infrastructure that would be Park Plaza in front of the stadium that would be used for not only the Vikings tailgating, or when you say tailgating, all their pregame activities, as well as for the authorities, all for our activities. Obviously, the Final Four, the Super Bowl, even concerts, dirt events. There's a lot of outdoor things that we need to have access for. So what we've done with the city is we've negotiated as part of that agreement in switching from our own kind of Park Plaza area to this linear three-block area, very specific uses that the team would have available for their events as well as the authority for our events. So, yes, that definitely is part of it and an important part of it.
Just, and Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, on the tailgating issue, just, you know, as the right now we have three tailgating lots that are right at the doorstep that are we lease, the Vikings lease from the Star Tribune. That's where the bulk of our tailgating occurs. It's about 900 spaces. Those lots are part of the Ryan project that Chair Kelm-Helgen spoke of, and so those lots are going away, and the good news is they're being developed into a mixed-use development. Also has a park that will be usable on game day for our fans and for the game day experience. We're involved with the city and with the neighborhoods in a couple of different tailgate task force. It's a big issue to our fans and a tradition for Viking fans. And so we're working on an expansion of the tailgate zone as the neighborhoods and the communities evolve, and we're working with neighborhoods and the city. But it's as those surface lots go away, the experience of tailgating also will evolve, and we'll have some activities on the plaza as well as the new park, and then expanded tailgating opportunities throughout the neighborhoods with expansion of the zone.
You guys don't mind 1 minute. We're going to just pass our minutes before we start losing folks. We've finally got a quorum.
Yes.
We don't have anybody on the phone, so this is good. And so I just wanted to make sure that if anybody had any questions on today's minutes, and I think we'll go ahead and pass the minutes from previous meetings too. Is there a motion?
So
moved.
So moved.
Second motion?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Motion prevails. Okay, anybody else? Yes, Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Michelle Kelm-Helgen, when are they going to announce where the Super Bowl will be located between those three cities?
May.
Chair Helgen?
May.
Yes, they make the decision in May.
Okay. Super. Okay, with that, Chair Helgen? You want to continue on with
yes.
the rest of the
Could I?
The
I'd like to
program?
Ask Alex Tittle, who's our equity director, to join me here to talk about the equity program, which I believe is also part of our agenda today.
Wonderful. Welcome, Mr. Tittle.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
As I mentioned, Alex Tittle is our equity director. Alex, maybe as you start, just take a minute, talk a little bit about your background. He is definitely uniquely suited for this role. And the one thing I just want to emphasize is, you know, the legislation was very specific in terms of meeting the goals for targeted businesses as well as workforce, and goals that really are much higher than have ever been set on any project before. And I think it is a testimony to the commitment of not only the authority, but the Vikings, as well as Mortenson Construction, the fact that we have taken project funds, hired a person whose job it is every day to get up and focus on and think about and worry about meeting these goals and making sure that we not only do it, but that it's verified and that we can demonstrate to everyone what the success is. So it's early in the project, but I think it's important to just note that this is probably the first project that has ever really had a whole system in place to focus on this, and perhaps it becomes a model that you can look at for other projects.
And members, we do have some very good percentages and numbers in our packet here of the benchmarks that are being met. So, Mr. Tittle, welcome.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
members of the committee. Just as Michelle said, I just take a second here just to tell you a little bit about myself. She introduced me initially from the last legislative committee meeting, and I believe you were on the phone, but just so we can get a name with a face. I pride myself mainly because I've worked with the community first and foremost. I've done a lot with the state government, but I'd like to say that the one thing that I'm most proud of is the fact that I've worked hard and closely with the community under Summit Academy OIC and a number of other organizations to ensure that folks from our community have an opportunity to understand what it takes to get into this type of field. Normally, over the course of most construction projects, everyone just has this big question mark on their forehead wondering, how come these people are working in my backyard and I don't know how to get there? I believe the organization that I used to work for and currently am committed to working with, they know how to do that. And I believe I bring that qualification also to the table. I've also spent some years at the Minnesota Department of Transportation as the assistant and most recently the director for the Civil Rights Office at MnDOT. So understanding these regulations, understanding the state statutes, the programs adherent to this project, I'm very familiar with those. So bringing those to the table, I hope to ensure that Mortenson, HKS, all of our committed partners are playing the part that they need to play to make sure that this project continues to be successful. All right. But just to get into the brief presentation, because I know we're probably running out of time. The workforce goals. We talk about the workforce goals in every setting that I sit in, and everyone used to be extremely concerned about the ability for us to make it to 32% minority. And I think we still should be concerned because there's some areas where we have some gaps. However, 32% is not unachievable, and I'll get to the numbers in a moment, but we set them there for a reason. We set them there because, I say we, Commissioner Lindsay, and it was adopted by the city of Minneapolis, we set them there because we felt as though the people in this community should have a fair shot. And the fact that we can enforce these goals to get people on the job through these goals is the first step. And not to mention the 6% women. That has consistently been the benchmark for the city, which off and on is and isn't being met. But I'd like to also say that we're hitting the ball there. We've also adopted the goals set for small businesses, particularly minority and women-owned small businesses, 11% women and 9% minority. And we've also identified that if you are a member of one of these certification programs as a minority or women-owned business, you have to be, I repeat, you have to be a headquartered business in the state of Minnesota. Can't be a certified business from Iowa or Wisconsin and try to take advantage of business credit on this project. You have to be located here. So we're pretty excited about that that tidbit inside of our equity plan. I'd also like to mention that outside of minority and women inclusion goals, we've also have a focus on veteran inclusion. Okay, as a 10-year veteran of the United States Armed Services, a lot of my brothers and sisters in arms find it difficult to find their way into the construction industry, much less into state opportunities. We've been working very diligently with a lot of our key stakeholders in the veteran community to include Veteran Administration, a lot of the representatives like Representative Detmer and those folks to ensure that this program is set up to be successful for and in the best interest of our men and women who fought for our freedoms. Also within the veteran, the equity plan, the small business aspect is something that's extremely unique. Within the state government, we look at mainly the DBE program, Disadvantaged Business Enterprise, where there's been some challenges and some issues with everyone not being able to participate. Within the equity plan, we've made it a point to ensure that not only the DBE but the targeted group business program, which I believe Senator Champion has been no pun intended, a champion behind. I also like to mention that the CERT Central Certification Program is also can be credited towards this project. So if you're not a part of the DBE program, you're not disqualified. But if you're part of one of the three, you have an ample opportunity to be successful on this project as well. So we're pretty excited about that. And I've been approached by a number of small businesses who, for some reason or another, did not see that the DBE program was in their best interest, or the TGB program was in their best interest, or the Central Certification Program. But they found that one of them worked for them. And the fact that we're using all of them towards the best interest of this project is an advantage for all small businesses within our state. Over the past, I would say, 6 months since I've been on board, and of course as we awarded the project to Mortenson Thor as the construction manager for this project, we've conducted a number of outreach and community engagement events. For example, we went to the Metro initially, and that was broadcast on the news to talk about the efforts that we're going to put into including small businesses, the efforts that we're going to focus on in including workforce from the local community. So we've done that here in the Metro. We've also taken it up north to Duluth. We've actually taken it down south to Rochester and Mankato as well to discuss how important it is for our community to be engaged in this project. And the simple message behind that was, if you don't show up, you're going to get left out. And I think people have heard that loud and clear, as you heard Michelle Kelm-Helgen mention that Fratellone, Ames Construction, and Mortenson Thor Construction, all local businesses are leaders in this project. And that's the way we like it, and that's the way we need to keep it. We also contact all minority women and veteran business enterprises. We've also contacted each of them whenever we're soliciting jobs or projects. So if you're a small business and you're part of one of those three directories that I just mentioned, you're going to get an email when it's time to solicit business or opportunities for that particular project. And that's ongoing. So businesses are getting communications from our construction manager on a regular basis. We've also conducted meet and greets and proposed and advertisements via newsprint, television, and the like. So we're consistently in the newspaper. We've got a very strong communication plan and effort through our chair and our CEO and our communications director and the like. So we're pretty excited about the direction that that's going as well. I'd be wrong if I didn't mention that we have a number of critical partners to the success of this effort. I'm not doing it by myself when it comes to compliance. The Vikings, as well as the MSFA, have entrusted a lot of this work to me. However, we have also partnered with a number of very competent organizations to help us in the compliance end. The City of Minneapolis Office of Civil Rights, under the leadership of Velma Corbel, or Director Velma Corbel, they have committed to assist us in a very unique way, and also partner, which I believe is very unique in its own right, with the Department of Human Rights. And they're both going to be providing one, either a person or people to help in the compliance end for workforce to ensure that we meet and exceed the 32% minority and women and 6% women goals, as well as providing an electronic system to manage and monitor the ebb and flow of activities that are going to occur on a daily basis on this project. We see that on a consistent basis out in Minneapolis, but nowhere else in the state. So I'm pretty excited to see how quickly we get this information and, of course, how readily we're able to provide that to the community so we can see how we're doing. And if we start to veer off pattern, we know how to adjust fire and actually get the people and the businesses needed to meet and exceed the goals online. I'd also like to mention that Summit Academy OIC, under the leadership of Lewis King and his staff, have been awarded as the employment assistance firm, which obviously is a legislative requirement, but we decided to use that when we didn't have to. We decided to use that on this project. Lewis and his team have coordinated amongst a number of nonprofit organizations as well as MNSCU organizations to provide qualified and effective workforce opportunities. When we talk about training, we talk about outreach, recruitment, and the like. So there's a number of different things that Summit Academy and the EAF are going to provide this organization, and having it under one umbrella, under Summit Academy, will make it that much more efficient for us when reporting and those types of things. I'd also mention that when it comes down to people, and I'm sure everyone hears, how do I get a job and how do I get on board with this project? One, we'd like to exercise that there is an EAF and there's a number of organizations involved. You've got Summit Academy, you've got the Urban League, or excuse me, Minneapolis Urban League, Minneapolis Community Technical College, St. Paul College, Merritt Community Services out on the east side of St. Paul. You've got a number of these organizations, but there's another opportunity for you to get there too. So we've been talking with Summit about putting a Dropbox at the job site, and that way, individuals who are interested in working, they don't have access to email, they don't know the number, they can come by the job site, grab an application, and stick it and fill it out and put it into the Dropbox. And Summit Academy and Mortenson Thor Construction will be able to assess those and potentially call them when they need to find qualified workers for the project. All right. The last thing before I get to the numbers is transparency. I'd like to also mention that on a bi-monthly basis, there will be a Stadium Equity Oversight Committee meeting. And during that Equity Oversight Committee meeting, we're going to be providing these regular updates on how the project is moving from an equity perspective, how the small businesses are performing, be it via minority, veteran, or women-owned small businesses, how they're performing against goal, workforce, as I mentioned, you know, minority women and veterans, how are they performing against goal, and so on and so forth. So the reports will be very, I want to say, complex, but at the same time answer the critical questions that are necessary to make sure that we have confidence that Mortenson is doing exactly what we're paying them to do. So taking a look, and everyone should have a copy of the report. I won't go through each block, but I will say that against for construction, the 11% and 9% goal, the 11% minority and 9% women goal, for construction, we're performing at 32% women and 11% minority, which is drastically exceeding the goal. In total, we're talking about 44 different small businesses, be it minority, veteran, or women. So that's extremely positive at this point in the project. Veterans, we're definitely moving in the right direction. Obviously, there's no goal in place, but we're moving forward and making sure that the small businesses that are in our vet biz directory are being solicited, and we're encouraging them to get engaged. Now, as far as workforce is concerned, against the 32% goal, we're performing at a 34% activity. And then for women, we're double the goal at 12%. I'd also like to mention that this report is strictly through December. There was not a lot of activity through December. And I would also like to mention that I did recently receive the report for the month of December itself, and we're definitely still trending in the right direction. Still at this point are exceeding the goal per Mortenson. However, I have yet to continue or complete reviewing what they brought forward and analyzing that against the federal documents. So that's where we are as far as the equity performance is concerned, and I'd like to open the floor for questions if anyone may have any.
Thank you, Mr. Till. That was very thorough.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. We've been having a few questions about that, and obviously this is the right time to do it with your report out and the trending report that will be coming, too. Appreciate that. My question is, are you planning on going on these statewide trips with the chair and the authority when they go out state? Will you be joining them on? You mentioned you
really
would be
talked
going.
About He does a lot of work in the Minneapolis area. We haven't really talked about the greater Minnesota trips. He certainly could, but we just haven't had a chance to talk about that.
Okay. Okay. Questions for Mr. Tittle? No? Wonderful. Thank you very much. That was,
thank you for your time, Madam Chair. Committee.
Look forward to an update, too, as we go along.
Great.
Appreciate that. Well, Chair Helgen, anything else that you would like to point out in your report?
I don't think so. I mean, the closing of the Metrodome, I think that was a pretty, there's a lot, and obviously our staff, led by Ted Mondale as the executive director, continues. There's a whole closeout process, if you think about it, in terms of all the records and the, you know, concessions and the whole operating pieces that have to be closed out and records retention and that kind of thing. And that obviously ends the chapter of the Metrodome, and now we're beginning to look forward to the opening of the new stadium. We've already chosen a concessionaire, a company that will be handling the concessions. We're looking, I should mention, part of the legislation required that we have currently, we operated the Metrodome with a staff at the commission that essentially reported to the executive director. The legislation has been very clear that we would bring in an outside third-party operator to operate the dome. Now, that's not to say I anticipate that the staff, a number of the staff at least, who have been with the Metrodome, operating the Metrodome, may continue at the new stadium as well. But we will have an outside third-party operator that comes in, and we're going to be doing an RFP that will go out mid-February to the end of February to solicit proposals from outside groups who will come in and bid for the operations. And they also should be providing us with some marketing help and that kind of thing. So we'll keep you posted on what happens there. That's a very, you know, the RFP will be posted on our website. We'll be doing analysis of the bids and interviews and make a selection that will all be very public. So,
Wonderful.
That's kind of the next big thing that we'll be looking at as we prepare for the new stadium to open as well.
How long are the terms of the commissioners?
They are typically when it started, one of the commissioners has a 3-year. There are 5 of us. Let me start out with that. I'm appointed by the governor, so I serve at the pleasure of the governor. So my term is whatever the governor decides my term should be as long as he is governor. The other commissioners, 2 of them are appointed by the governor, in this case, Dwayne Benson and John Griffith. One of them has a 3-year term and one has a 4-year term, just so they aren't all up at the same time. The same thing with the city folks. The 2, Barbara Butts-Williams and Bill McCarthy, are appointed by the mayor. And one was appointed for a 3-year term and one was appointed for the 4-year term. To be honest, I don't even know who has 3 or 4-year terms. Mm-hmm. But there will be then, so it's been like a year and a half, roughly. So in another year and a half, 2 of the members will be up who have 3-year terms, and then the following year, the other 2 members will be up for appointment.
Well, I must say, I think you and the commissioners have found your cadence. So,
well, and I just want to emphasize, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I am sort of the public voice of the authority, but all of my members are very involved. I will tell you, Dwayne Benson is our treasurer. He handles all of, he is briefed in detail before all of our meetings on the financial aspects. He deals on all of the financial aspects of the stadium. When we've had RFPs for trustees to come in, for title companies, anything related to the financial aspects, Dwayne has taken on. Bill McCarthy, obviously, as the regional labor person, has been involved in the development of the PLA. He's my vice chair. He does a lot of public meetings. When I can't be there, he's kind of my backup. He handles many of the city, both Barbara Butts-Williams and Bill McCarthy being city representatives, have been active in all of the city work that goes on. They do regular meetings with the mayor and some of the council members, so they're very involved in that. And John Griffith, who's the executive vice president at Target Corporation for property development, I rely on him literally on a sometimes daily basis for advice and direction as we've gone through like all the development agreements. He's done a lot of work on the not only the construction but the design work originally, and he's definitely involved as a consultant in all of that. So it's those other members don't get noticed nearly enough for the work that they do. They are all very involved. So
that's wonderful.
We appreciate the quality of membership, too, that we have on the board because they all have their role. So
I think it was a nice number, too, five commissioners. Was a good.
Yeah, it operates well.
It operates very well. And the other piece that was in that piece of legislation besides the membership was, of course, your report that came out January 15th, and also a report to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which was filed. And members, that was given to you. I don't think we had plans on going through that today, but if there's any questions, you can certainly bring that up. So those two requirements have been fulfilled from the legislation, which is good. Any other further questions for Chair Helgen? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Appreciate
very
it.
Much.
Thank you, Mr. Tittle. Nice
Thank
to see you.
Thank you. Likewise.
We'll be seeing you again soon. We also just have a couple more items. Representative Dabney's, he was unable to attend the meeting today, unfortunately, but I did talk to him about the facility study for the two cities. There is a copy of his letter in your packet also, members. And he is... piece of legislation that was carried by Representative Dabney and Senator Herr on the Senate side, and basically it the data practices the way the law is written in Minnesota, and as it's explained to me by Representative Dabney is that it's the sharing of the information was not explicitly detailed in the legislation, and for us to do that, it would be open to public viewing after that has happened. So there may be some adjustments in this study for this to be complete, to get the correct information from the entities that are being required to give the information. And perhaps it's something that we can build up similar to the angel investment tax credit, where it's given but it's not open. So there's some adjustments, and Representative Dabney is committed to working on this further and making sure that we get it right, because we certainly don't want this proprietary information out publicly. But we do need to have this study completed, and completed in a very thorough manner without costing more money. So Chair Champion or Vice Chair Reinert, do you have any comments on that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm wondering why there weren't any red flags from staff on this legislation when it, in terms of the data privacy, just because this is an issue of, obviously, we're all sensitive to that private-public partnership aspect of some of the data involved, and I just wonder how we missed it.
I believe there was a lot going on last year.
Yes.
I don't know this. We will, there is going to be more work on this in order to get the study complete. So that's what Representative Dabney was committed to. Any questions on that? Okay, super. The last thing on the agenda before we get to Mr. Backley, can you come up? I do have a question for you about... Well, about many things, actually. One of them is the soccer. Can you tell us what's going on with soccer as we're talking about extra revenue and things happening in the Dome?
Yes, Madam Chair. The Vikings ownership and management team has had a recent meeting with the Major League Soccer commissioner and president. And to continue our discussion, we've had an ongoing dialogue with Major League Soccer. And the But as we've had a lot of work to do on get to the groundbreaking and all the things that Chair Kelmhelgen has spoken of, we've had a lot on our plate, so we kind of set the soccer discussion aside a little bit. But now that we have the shovel in the ground, and now I think we hope that this last hurdle and the legal challenge is behind us, we are picking up those discussions with Major League Soccer. And, you know, there it's as you know, the legislation included a five-year exclusive window for the Vikings to bring in a soccer team, a Major League Soccer team, into the stadium. So we've begun those discussions. There would likely have to be some adjustments to the stadium to make it more intimate, to reduce the house, if you will, to match up attendance of soccer. In 2013, MLS league-wide averaged just over 18,000 fans per game. There are 17 home games per season, and it's the last 2 years in a row, MLS has exceeded the average attendance of both the NBA and the NHL. Their average ticket price is roughly, I think it's $26, and we're very bullish on soccer in the market. I think there's a lot of interest in the market. There's a lot of support. There's a lot of grassroots soccer that occurs in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and surrounding areas. So we'll start to dig into that a little bit now as our workload with the groundbreaking behind us and the construction beginning lightened a little bit, so we can turn our attention to MLS.
Super. Any questions? How about can you give us an update on your coaching staff?
Well, we're very excited to introduce to the Minnesota Viking fans head coach Mike Zimmer, who was the defensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, now is our new Viking head coach. He's very, very down to earth, very direct, but a great coach, a great X's and O's guys, really an expertise in defense, calling plays and anticipating what an offense will bring. But he's putting his coaching staff together right now, and I think early next week we should be able to announce our full roster of coaches. So many of our coaches are down in Mobile, Alabama right now for the Senior Bowl, which is where the seniors are coming out going into the draft. But we're very much in the off-season swing, draft, free agency, evaluating our roster, and so very busy, but very excited about the new coach and the new era at the Vikings with Coach Zimmer. And he's excited about playing two seasons at TCF Bank Stadium, and he's excited about the new stadium project. He's been briefed on it and looks forward to it as well. And I look forward to committee members meeting him. He's a great guy. He'll represent our organization and this market very well.
That's wonderful. I have to laugh. He's excited about playing at TCF after a day like today.
He's in Mobile today. So maybe
he's in Mobile. That's right. Yeah. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bagley, just a question on the Super Bowl application or possibility for 2017. I had read that this year's Super Bowl is in New York. They're fearing a snowstorm, but it's there because of their new stadium. Does it give us a heads up over Indianapolis and New Orleans that we have the stadium coming on board?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, absolutely. It is the NFL. First of all, their weather right now, it's 10 days or so out. They're looking at 20 to 30 degrees, which is, we'll take that. That's balmy. For we'll go short sleeves there. But NFL has evolved the way they award Super Bowls, and it's now it alternates between warm weather destinations, which we are not, and with markets that have resolved stadium issues, and our commissioner, as many of you met him and worked with, Commissioner Goodell, has been to this market a number of times, was involved, the NFL is very involved, and they know what we put in, what this community did, what this state did, what the legislature did to pass this bill and get this stadium online, so they know that the energy and effort that went in, the commitment that was made. So the New York New Jersey Super Bowl is partially because of it's a new stadium that was a larger market. It was primarily privately funded, but there was public money that went into the infrastructure. But other markets like Indianapolis, Detroit, who are northern climates and have resolved their stadium issues, were rewarded, if you will, with a Super Bowl. And it is a big deal. And working with Chair Kelmhelgen and a group of folks putting this effort together, we're one of our key pitches to the league is that issue is that. We delivered a public-private partnership. It's going to be a great stadium for all Minnesotans, for Viking fans, and it's designed by HKS Architects, who've designed Cowboys Stadium and Indianapolis Stadium, two of the last three Super Bowls. So they are very familiar. The league is very familiar with the architect, and they've been taking a look at our design and to make sure that it works for Super Bowl. So we have a very good chance. As Chair Kelmhelgen said, the announcement will be end of May, but our bid is due on April 1st. Our Super Bowl bid is due April 1, and we're working hard on that right now with the hospitality community and the business community. And we'll be talking more about that in the coming days as we lead up to the Super Bowl on February 2nd in New York, New Jersey.
Thank you, Mr. Bagley.
Thank you.
Okay, our final item is the discussing our February meeting and meetings thereafter. So perhaps by February we could have another update from the chair and the authority. Is any suggestions on this?
None for me.
Madam Chair, I think in terms of when we might meet during the legislative session, we might have our staffs look at our common schedules and see if we need to move to an evening or, what our options are in terms of our committee commitments. So that would be my suggestion there. The February meeting is a little bit problematic because mm-hmm. we're scheduled for 2 weeks from now, which is
right
close. And then if we think of moving it further into February, of course, session begins that last week in February. So I don't know if we can go to the middle of the month or not. But you had suggested at some point the 20th, and that doesn't work for some of us. But
mm-hmm. Or the 21st or something. But it doesn't seem right to meet in 2 weeks. No. So perhaps, did you have something to say, Representative? Does anybody have anything?
Madam Chair, maybe the 24th, like the Monday before the Tuesday? I think
we should try to get one in before,
before we
start, and then discuss this further during. But you're probably right. We could maybe have a quick meeting. I think we are by the legislation, we are supposed to meet monthly. So and perhaps a study will be done by then, and what else needs to be coming up by that time?
We get more info and just all the other work that's going on. That's
the bonds and all that. So
perhaps, Madam Chair, I did say that I didn't have a suggestion, but perhaps it's the week of the 20th, and I think it could still happen after we, or even the following week, but after we start the session, especially if it's right in the beginning, because everyone is getting their footing, and it's mm-hmm. not as if our schedules would be much more challenging. And if we think about it that way, it still allows our staff time to, look at our various schedules and then come up with something that makes sense. Okay.
So if we send out a couple dates you guys can choose from, would that be okay? And then we can go from there probably that third week in February.
Madam Chair, I'll just say that if it's during session, you'll probably have a better turnout because the members are here. It's hard for rural members to get here during the week if we don't have any other meetings that particular day.
Or, Madam Chair, Senator Housley's suggestion of the day before, I think more of us might come up for that full week anyway,
yep.
and so it wouldn't involve an extra commute, as the mm-hmm. week before would involve that extra travel. Mm-hmm. So that might be worth looking into that Monday.
Should we just vote on it here, since we did have a quorum Monday before? Senator Champion?
Yeah.
Okay.
So moved.
All right. All those in favor of February 24th, Monday of February 24th?